Happy New Year's, everybody, and here we are at Body Bag Podcast starting a new season. This is season 7, and of course, I'm your host, Broker Dave, and with me, as always, is Chris Thomas.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hello, sir. That's
And
what I'm going to be calling you this entire season.
well, if you listen to last season, I did win our versus battle, but if you're new, every season we, some episodes we do a versus where we each pick a movie, and whoever has the better movie scores a point, and the winner of the season kind of picks the theme for the next upcoming season. I won last season.
I did get kind of off to a rough. I'm a little. It's a bittersweet thing because as much as it's cool setting the groundwork for what we're going to be kind of talking about, we did get off to a rough start with a false start. We didn't get to do the autopsy of Jane Doe, or got lost.
Yes, the premiere of season 6 is supposed to be Autopsy of Jane Doe. Technical issues. It didn't ever reach the air.
Yeah, you could just say, Chris, you fucked up and lost it.
No, I'm not gonna say
I will.
that. But maybe we could do a special episode sometime this season.
Maybe, but it did give me a chance to, because our replacement episode was The Witch, which is good because that's probably my favorite Robert Eggers movie.
Yeah, so which is good. And so my theme for this season, I decided we are going to have a double feature of some classic movies.
Which was a pleasant surprise because I know that. Are you starting to warm up to black and white movies?
I'm pretty good on black and white films.
Oh, you just didn't like silent.
Yeah, silent movies, and it's like unnecessary black and white films. Kind of like The Lighthouse.
Like The Lighthouse or The Artist
Yeah.
or.
Where it's unnecessary. Like, I could watch old classic films in black and white, no problem.
Well, The Artist was actually kind of necessary because it was an homage to that era, but I get what you mean.
Yeah.
Wait, so does that mean you don't like movies like Sin City?
I've never seen Sin City.
Oh man. All right. Well, I was going to say that was going to be part of our double feature, but you have ground rules for the double features.
Yes. So, before we get into what today's double features are, we're actually going to talk about a newer movie, or well, Chris's, because he went and saw Nosferatu, and then he wanted to
Nosferatu.
talk about it.
Yeah, if you hadn't seen, I don't know if you went on Instagram, but I posted actually a review of it.
Yeah.
As of right now, my standing for Nosferatu is a 21.9 out of 30.
Okay, so pretty good.
It's pretty good, but I do have a little bit of gripes with it.
Yeah, okay.
I'll just say this because I kind of, it's still out, it's still new, it's only been out for like 2 weeks, so I'm not going to go into spoiler territory.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I will say the thing that it scored highest for me was technicals.
Okay. Yeah, Robert Eggers directing it, of course.
So I knew when I was going in that I was at least going to be in for a visual treat.
Yeah.
And it was good. It played around with a lot of darkness and silhouettes, and I've been hearing a lot of people say that the movie is boring, but that's because a lot of people are going into this probably not knowing the original source material Nosferatu, which you and me have watched,
Yes, we have.
and two, probably not really knowing who Robert Eggers's filmography.
Yeah, Robert Eggers, you gotta be in the mood for one of those types of movies.
If you're going into this thinking, oh, vampire movie, what is this going to be? Kind of like Lost Boys, new.
No. Yeah.
All right, well, no, is it going to be like Fright Night or maybe Van Helsing? New.
Yeah. Robert Eggers is a slow burn director.
Think less Lost Boys and more Let the Right One In.
Yeah.
This was a, if you, and again, surprisingly, this movie was very faithful to the original.
Nice.
Even down to, I think I said Lily Rose Depp,
Yeah.
who plays, it
How
was
was she in
either,
this movie?
she was acting her ass off.
Yeah, because I know when this movie originally came up that they were gonna do it, they casted Anya Taylor-Joy.
I could
But
see that
because
too.
because it got pushed back and scheduling, she got replaced,
Well,
so.
I would have liked it either way because I love Anya Taylor-Joy.
Me too. One of my favorite actresses going right now,
And
so.
I could have definitely seen her doing this. Plus, I mean, she was in The Witcher. She already has a rapport with the director.
Yeah, I think she was in The Northman too with Robert Eggers, so you know they work well together.
I will say there were some instances where I couldn't tell if she was overacting or not, but then again, if you saw the original,
Original.
all the actors were overacting in that one.
Yeah,
It's
it wasn't. It's a silent film, so you kind of have to. But I understand harking back and playing homages to the source
like
material.
even Air Knock, you remember Knock, the crazy dude who was in the insane asylum, who
Yeah.
was the dude who played it. The Knock character in this one, he was overacting his ass off too. Like there were certain things where you could hear people kind of chuckling,
Yeah.
like. But I don't know if that was.
I'm thinking that's more on purpose to pay like the homage of the silent film this movie came from.
And I will say this also without going into too much, but at some instances, it starts feeling less like a vampire movie and more of a possession film.
Oh, I don't like that.
In terms of. Count Orlok's hold over people.
Yeah, okay. All right. But they did play into that in the silent film too.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So
You gotta
it
be
doesn't
familiar with the original Nosferatu, or it's really gonna throw you off of
like
what
it
you're
feels like
describing.
it goes into that Satanism territory,
Yeah.
which like it's Count Orlok is pretty much like a demon, less a vampire, more of just like this demon who can like have hold over people from like far away.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna go see this movie, and I'll just tell you one or two gripes. Near the end, there were certain things that the characters did that I was like, all right, you kind of know what Count Orlok is about right now. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
As well as there were some scenes that I thought, I don't know if gratuitous is the word I would use for the nudity. It's not graphic, but there's certain scenes
It feels unnecessary,
that
or
you do go kind of like, all right, you could have done this scene. Why'd you make her take her top off for?
yeah.
And you do see a bit of Count Orlok schlong.
Oh, God, yeah.
But the acting was really good.
All right, that's good.
Bill Skarsgård, I've heard people either I haven't heard anybody say they loved his performance as Count Orlok, but I've heard plenty of other people. This isn't a spoiler, but he has a mustache. I've heard some people say that mustache looks fucking ridiculous. But he's supposed to be in Transylvania. He looks kind of like a Cossack.
Yeah.
Like so it didn't bug me, but the accent might for some people.
Okay.
But other than that, I gave it a 21 out of 9. I enjoyed that I watched it, and but I'll say that the top three people, Lily Rose Depp, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Nick Holt, all superb acting.
Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna wait for it to come out on streaming to watch it, but
Okay. And I think I was pretty non-spoilery.
yeah, no.
So, but yeah, that's my little mini review. If you want my actual breakdown of Technicals story and enjoyment, it's on
Yes.
Instagram.
Yeah, make sure you're following us on Instagram.
All right, but yeah, that's my little mini review.
All right. Now it is time to hop into our time machine. Go back to 1957.
Crank up the speed to 88 miles an hour,
Yeah.
1.21 gigawatts, and go back to 1950 something.
57. And then we're gonna pull up to a drive-in for a double feature.
Now, you're always so good to me because you got the first pick of this double
Yeah.
feature. Oh, and tell him what the your rules are for our double feature.
So our double feature is they have to be classic movies, and both movies need to come out in the same year. And for us, I think a classic movie is a movie that came out before we were born, so 1990 and before.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be black and white, but it has to be before we were born.
Yeah.
But we just started early.
Yeah.
And you chose one of my favorite movies of all time
Yeah.
and probably one of the goofiest movies I've ever watched of all time.
Yeah, this is a
Oh, and they have to be one horror and one non, if I'm not
what
mistaken.
yeah, one non-horror and one horror movie. Because
Cool.
this is a horror movie podcast, so do need to talk about horror, but it's okay to branch out.
Yeah, and this movie is quote unquote horror.
Yeah, and I feel like we should always start with the non-horror and then end with the horror movie. So,
Oh, that's fine.
first movie of this double feature, 12 Angry Men.
Now I'm going to be very biased on this one because 12 Angry Men I is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Me too. It's like probably like when people are like, oh, Casablanca, or what's the other movie that people are like,
Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane, or like best movie of all time, I'm like 12 Angry Men for me.
12 Angry Men for me, it's about as perfect as a movie can get, really,
Yeah.
for the kind of movie that it is.
Exactly.
I before we do, I do want to just do a quick one sentence sum up, just because if you haven't seen this movie, I would urge you please to go see it. Even if you don't really watch a lot of black and white movies, you'll watch this and you'll see how it is. You've seen this setup in pop culture before.
Yeah, I've yet to watch the new one on HBO Max, which is like Juror Number Two, but I really want to watch it. I just haven't had the time.
But a short summary of this is that I think he's a teenager, is on his life for the murder of his father, and it is up to 12 jurors to decide his fate. The evidence is overwhelming that this kid is guilty, but there is one juror who, not saying that he is innocent, but is at least saying, hey, we should look at the evidence to the full extent.
Yeah, in case you're one of our international listeners in the American justice system, when you're on a jury, you get to choose if the person is guilty or not guilty. And if you're going with guilty, you have to be sure without a reasonable doubt that this person is guilty.
I thought you were
So
about to go into.
if you're there like, I think he might have did it, but I'm unsure, then you should be voting not guilty.
At least that's how it should be.
Yeah. And this movie does touch on some issues for the time it was made. And that's one of the things I've always just adored about this movie. Because you gotta think, for the time, it brought up issues that people either A, didn't want to talk about, or B, didn't think was a problem.
Yeah, this movie is very progressive in the way it tackles certain subjects,
Yeah.
and because the kid, if I'm not mistaken, the teenager is a Hispanic kid,
Puerto Rican, yeah,
Puerto
which
Rican, sorry, Puerto Rican,
in New York
and
City in the 50s, which at the time was a rough time for Puerto Rican in that city. Yeah.
like they were considered quote unquote those people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how people would refer to, like, immigrants, people of color,
Yeah.
that sort of thing. And I'll say right off the bat, this review is kind of gonna not be linear, just because the whole story is they go over evidence and then bring up another piece of evidence, and it is slowly. Oh, and you don't realize this until the very end, but there are no names in this movie, really.
No.
The jurors don't have names.
They're all like jury. Yeah.
Yeah, juror number one, juror number two.
Yeah.
There's only two that you really need to know, and that's juror number three and juror number eight.
Yeah.
Juror number eight is the guy at the very beginning of the movie. They're all like, all right, let's just, everybody's just talking like, oh, we'll be out of here in like 5 minutes. This ain't gonna take long. Let's just take a,
Let's take a vote.
yeah, let's take a vote, see what everybody says, guilty or not guilty.
Yeah, and also in the American justice system, for guilty verdict, it has to be a consensus 12 out of 12 or 6
Yeah.
out of 12, depending on the trial.
It has to be unanimous.
Yeah, unanimously.
And if there is one person that is like, I don't think so, then what is that, a hung jury, or they have to.
It becomes a hung jury at that point if it's a mixed batch, like 1 to 11 hung jury or anything like that. So then they could retry the case. But if 12 out of 12 say not guilty, then the case is dropped and the defendant can't be retried on it.
And I will say this at the very beginning of this movie, 11 out of the 12 jurors are people who you would never want to have on your jury panel.
Yeah.
Like, you have people who, first off, they make sure to let you know this is a hot day. This is a hot day. It's 12 guys all in a cramped room, and you have guys who just want to get out of here. There's a guy who has baseball tickets and he just wants to get out and go see the game. You have
And AC really wasn't a thing yet, I don't think.
No, they have like the windows open.
Windows open, a small fan that doesn't work. Yeah.
You have two or three of them that are just kind of go with the flow
Yeah.
guys who are like, oh, I'll vote who like how everybody else is voting. And so it's like a mixed bag of people
Yeah.
who all most of them want to just kind of they want to say guilty for various reasons.
Yeah. and a lot of it is like kind of like I think there's a lot of guys that are just like believed in like people in a position of authority no matter what. So if like the district attorney and police are saying this guy's guilty, he's gonna be guilty to them.
And juror number eight is the one guy they randomly vote, and he votes not guilty. And people are pissed. They're like, "Oh my God, all right, why are you voting not guilty?" And the guy's just like, he's the only person taking this, like, "Hey, look, we have a dude's life in our hands."
Yeah, he's like, I'm not saying he's not guilty. I'm just saying we need to talk about this because this guy could get the death penalty if we don't.
Like, we need to, like, I just want to go over the evidence one more time, just to make sure that before we send this dude to the electric chair, that he actually did the crime.
Yeah.
And the crime is that this kid's father was murdered, stabbed to death with a switchblade.
Yeah, and the which. Now, what is it, juror number two that freaks out on him?
Well, the other one is there's juror number eight and juror number three. Three is the one who is very
Adamant,
angry
yeah.
and adamant that this kid is guilty.
Juror number three is like, what the hell? No, like, why are we gonna do this? Kid's guilty as guilty could be. Didn't you see the same trial we did?
He's like, yeah, but dude's quick to like throw the book at him.
Yeah.
And little by little throughout their time there, juror number eight starts kind of chipping away
At the case,
at the case.
like the attorney should have.
Like the attorney, yes.
That's the very first point that jury number eight brings out. He's like, I don't think the defense attorney did a very good job on this.
Dude felt like he just wanted to get out of there,
Yeah.
which he was obviously probably just a court-appointed attorney. This kid
Yeah,
wasn't rich.
they say he was court appointed.
Yeah, he wasn't, the kid's not rich. He lives on the, I guess, bad side of town,
Yeah.
rough side of town, I'll say.
Yeah.
And like little by little, he chips away. Like one of the other pieces of evidence is the knife, the knife weapon. He said the kid stabbed him with this very unique. They're like this very unique switchblade that's, you can't really find it in a lot of places. And the juror number eight just reaches into his pocket, pulls out one that looks just like it, and puts it right on the table.
He was like, I found it at a mart for $6.
You could get it at any like pawn shop,
Yeah.
like in which he could have got arrested for that because I believe switchblades were illegal.
Buying and selling switchblades I think they might still be illegal in New York. But also bringing any type of blade into a
Courtroom setting.
I don't know how the 50s were with that rule, but now, yeah.
And that sways, with little things like that, he sways another person.
Well, the first person he sways, he didn't really sway. He's just like, well, because he's like, all right, so you guys vote again, and if all 11 say guilty, I'll vote guilty with you.
Yes. When I
And
say
then,
sway, I mean,
yeah.
like, not say he's not guilty, but say, hey, maybe we should look at it a little more.
And then the 11 other voted, it was 10-1, guilty and not guilty. And the guy's like, I still think he's guilty, but I'm starting to think we need to talk about this more.
And
Just to be sure, yeah.
juror number three, like he at first he thinks he knew
Yeah,
who
because they did
did
a anonymous vote, yeah.
it. They did an anonymous vote, and juror number three is like, "Oh, it was you, did I?" He
Gets
little
into the
fancy
face of an
words,
old
and
man, yeah.
yeah, he does little fancy words and sad story, gives
Yeah, and then
you
the
some
other
sob
juror's
story
like,
about
no, it
the kid
wasn't
being blah blah
him.
blah, and then you bl it was me.
Yeah, I did it. I
So
voted.
already there's tension.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's all right now there's tension here. Like
Yeah, jury number three is one of those guys that he flies off the handle at any. You can tell he has anger issues.
and so the movie is pretty much like this, and it's not really that long of a movie,
I believe
if
it is
I'm
an hour and 34 minutes.
yeah, it's like it's just your standard like 90-minute runtime.
Yeah.
And I'll say, well, I'll save that for the technicals and
Yeah.
in the story bit, but
But yeah,
so
they continue just breaking down this case bit by bit.
and some of the other evidence is like they recreate the crime scene. They
Yeah.
get a layout of the guy's house, and
See if the witness could actually walk from his room to the door to see the kid running out and the time he said he did and
because there's a it was also the murder also took place as a train was going by.
yeah.
And they recreate the scene to be like, okay, it would have taken him at least this long, but he said on the stand, it was this amount of time, and yeah, of course he would. The guy, probably wasn't a nobody for his entire life, and now he's, a key witness in this thing. Now he's an important guy, so of course he's gonna, he's now a star witness, so now he's getting attention. So it's this movie is great at just showing how people aren't perfect, and people bring in their own baggage to things like this.
Yeah, like the other witness who saw him stab his father on the other side of the... Because her apartment is across the L tracks from the apartment where the crime happened. She said she saw it through the last two cars of the L track. And then they point out that the woman who was in bed when she turned over and saw it, but she wears glasses. And, if you wear glasses all, you don't go to bed in your glasses.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Unless you were drunk and then you've passed out.
Yeah.
Somebody who wears glasses, no, you take care of that shit.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that, I think that was one of the big things too. But so now we get to basically the turning point. What's the deal with juror number three?
Yeah, juror number three, and like last couple, you could see
he's getting pissed off more and more as the yeah. people are getting swayed.
And I think that's where this movie goes from good to
amazing.
Yeah, because it tackles issues that you wouldn't expect something to be tackled in 1957.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the biases that these people had. Like one he did just because, he's a Hispanic immigrant and they're stabbing each other all the time. Or that jury number three, his main issue is he has a terrible relationship with his son.
Yeah.
Because he was really hard on his son, as now his son doesn't talk to him. And you can see how that affects the way he saw this case.
And like so when he sees like this kid who stabbed his father, he sees his son doing that to his father.
Yeah, it brought back all the pain of when his son cut contact with him.
And
he's still bitter about that. But
and that's why I said the brilliance of this movie is that everybody brought their own baggage into this thing. The juror number three who has that with his son, the guy who has tickets and he just wants to get out of there.
Yeah.
The juror number eight.
As soon as it went like it was like close to switching not guilty, switches just because
he realizes
that
he breaks down in tears when he's sitting there saying, kids, all you do is you do everything you can for them and they've just done great. And then you just start realizing, oh, through his monologue, oh, this dude has problems with his kids here. And
I think the actor for juror number three does a really good job in this movie.
Fantastic job.
Yeah. Like, you're supposed to hate him and think he's an asshole, and he does that perfectly. He doesn't overact it to where you're like, where it becomes unbelievable. It's a grounded performance.
And throughout the, it's one of those grounded performances where as you're watching it, you are like, and when he talks, you do go like, dude, what is your problem?
Yeah.
Like you're not like.
He invokes the actual emotions he's supposed to invoke where you're like, dude, fuck, is this dude's deal?
Hey, Train.
Oh, Train's joining us for season 7.
Train is our most avid listener.
Yeah.
Yeah. They heard us talking about the A-Train.
Yeah, the L-Tracks.
Or the L-Tracks.
We don't have L-Tracks in transport trains where I live. That's just supply trains. Indiana, crossroads of America.
Yeah, that's all we have over in the Virginia Beach area. I mean, we have buildings and shit, but we do. Those are the only kinds of trains, really.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so the entire time in the movie, you're like, dude, what the hell is your problem, man? Why are you so angry for? And then in that monologue, you go, oh.
It all just kind of clicks and makes sense. So then this, at the end, he finally goes, he's just exhausted. He's argued to the point to where he can't argue anymore. And he just goes, not guilty.
He's just defeated because he's like, I think at that moment, after he does his whole monologue and he tears up like a picture that he has of him and his son that he just, he just has this realization that is just
and
not
I think
guilty.
It does a really good job of being less is more
mm-hmm.
because as the viewer of this movie, we have no idea if this kid was guilty or not. We know he was acquitted by, a jury of his peers, but we really don't know what happened that night. And I'm glad they kept it that way.
And they do a good job at like convincing us, the audience too,
yeah.
of like, maybe this kid is not guilty. Like he's and I mean there is no, I think, or there might have been, but I think most of this stuff is like, this is how it could have happened. But in the end, the verdict is not guilty, and the jurors leave. And at the very end, you find out, this is why I love this part, when at the very end the jurors leave, and juror eight turns to one of the other ones. I think it was juror nine, and he's like, "Oh, hey, my name is this, by the way. Like, let's just say John. Oh, my name's John, by the way. Oh, and I'm Tim." And you just think, and I just sat there and go, "Oh yeah, you didn't really know these guys' names.
Yeah, that is true.
Like this entire time, you know who each of the characters are. Each of the characters have a very distinct personality."
Yeah, but as someone who went through the experience of being called for jury duty, that threw me off because in that whole selection process, we talked to each other. I knew the people's names that I met there. So I think you went through a 3 week trial and didn't know each other's name.
But I think that was a very, very smart move, because having them not have any names makes you go, "Oh, these are just 12 random people."
No, I agree. Not having them names in the movie is great. It's just last thing I was like, oh, it does make you think back, like, yeah, we don't know their names.
Yeah, I thought that was brilliant, because then having them not have names, and then you find out, oh, these aren't actual people, but they're just random people. Like, you don't know their names, and these random people are in charge of your life.
But yeah,
And
this movie is just a master class.
yeah, and whenever I go, this is always my go-to example when I go, this is how you write dialogue, because you are stuck in one setting for the entirety of this movie.
Yeah, there's basically two sets to this movie, the jury room and then the bathroom of the jury room.
And if you have to just be in one spot for 90 minutes, your dialogue better be top notch.
Yeah.
And
I don't think a movie today could do that.
there's probably, well, I have to watch it, but there's a movie that recently came out in 2024 with Tom Hanks in it, called This Place. I think it's called This Place. And it's about one house or one setting over the course of like many, many years, but it's
Yeah,
one.
I saw a preview for that, but
I haven't seen it, but if it's anything like that's pretty cool. I respect any movie that can like just, oh, there's one, if you like movies like that, I'll say, if you like Samuel Jackson and Tommy Lee Jones, there's a movie called The Sunset Limited.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
It's all in one apartment building. It's pretty good. I'd recommend it. It's not a horror movie, but if you like movies like this with one setting where you just have to rely on dialogue, give it a check it out.
But I'm also saying, like, it's also like the consumer base of nowadays. Attention spans has gotten a lot shorter, so
Oh yeah, that's not the, this it isn't the kind of movie that they would release in theaters. This one I think was like HBO or something like that. But if you're a movie buff or a movie guy who actually likes movies and not just like a regular consumer, but actually like the art of filmmaking, then that movies like this is, like you said, a masterclass.
Yeah, just one of those movies. I have to go back and revisit every once in a while. The main reason I chose it.
And I'll say this, well, we're gonna have more fun in the second half of the review, because I think when we talk about movies that we like and that we're basically just praising, it's entertaining for us. But I think a lot of times the people like hearing movies that are kind of bad. Those are the more fun ones to talk about.
I
But
think this double feature does have a good balance.
yeah, because don't worry, people, if you're like, "Wow, this is kind of light on laughs or any kind of humor," it's coming.
But then again, 12 Angry Men, it's a serious film.
it is as very serious. It's a courtroom, well, not courtroom drama. It's a juror room drama. It's a legal drama.
It's a legal drama, and they're with no like comedic scenes or like a let you know a comedic break any point to break the tension, because it doesn't need to. That tension is what makes a movie great.
And I'll go into more of that in technicals as well when we break it down.
All right. Let's go into our breakdown then.
I'll start.
Okay.
I'm giving it a nine.
You're giving it a 9 on technicals?
I'm giving it a nine on technicals. When I read a I read a good amount of like behind the scenes stuff about movie making, and this one, like the if you watch it from start to end, you will notice that the shots get closer and closer as in like wide shots. They start using more medium shots and then close-up shots, and then as the movie goes along, to give it that sense of claustrophobia of these guys are just stuck in this room together, and you just feel the claustrophobia of like, and it's hot outside, and it's just like you start feeling the tensions even in the shots. The music used sparingly.
I miss that in older movies. I feel like in older films, music makes more of a point than it does now.
Like the good ones, they used sound and music to the advantage of the movie, and not just as we need something in the background because we don't like silence.
I'm right there with you with the 9, because technically, for the time it came out, it's as perfect you could do with a film.
It was a $337,000 budget.
With there's no practical or special effects, even they didn't need it, but
All of that went to the actors.
I'm gonna stick with the 9. I don't know, do I give it a 9.5?
Can give it whatever you want.
I'm stuck because it's basically, just using the score and the acting to make a compelling film with little to no effect. And I don't want to punish it for the fact that it has no effects in it,
Oh no, a nine for me. I'm not punishing it by giving it a nine.
Oh no, 9's, it's not very often we give a movie in technicals higher than like an 8 something. So the fact that we're in the 9s, I'm like, I'll go 9.3.
Okay.
And just the fact that it is a movie that is now, what, 68 years old?
About that.
And you could still watch it and be perfectly fine. So yeah, I'm gonna go 9.3.
A story I will give a 9.5. I don't give the and the only reason why I'm not doing tens is because I never give perfect scores. But 9.5 is about as perfect as a score I can give something.
I'm gonna give it a 9.2 because it is as close to a perfect story as you could get for a film.
And
Just I love this movie a lot.
it is in my top five, if not top three, favorite movies of all time. And there's reason for that. Sometimes I'm hesitant to give things high scores, like, oh, well, you just hopping. All the critics gave it. Yeah, there's a reason why all the critics gave it like high scores, is because it earned it.
And being that now we're kind of film critics, if we give too many movies high scores, then the high scores don't mean anything.
Because as of right now, like when we were doing the Thing review, Thing's one of my favorite horror movies, probably my favorite horror movie, at least one of them. And I had to still kind of be like eight in some spots, and not like if I had these two movies together, 12 Angry Men is definitely a better movie.
Yeah, I would say when I reviewed Scream, which is my favorite movie of all time, for me, it is like as close to a perfect movie as I've seen. I still think that I gave it like 28 something out of 30, so.
And I'll say this, another reason why I'm going to give it a story 9.5. You could close your eyes and just listen to this movie and you could still follow it. If you just closed your eyes and just listened to the movie, you wouldn't miss anything. And to be able to do that is a feat.
But also, it's coming, it was like when we came out, what, 15 years after people were just sitting by the radio getting their entertainment that way. So,
And you have seen this. I've seen this same plot copied in different. I saw it copied in Hey Arnold, and in Monk. If any of you guys have ever seen the show Monk, it's one that there's a reason why it can be repeated.
It's just great.
And enjoyment.
Enjoyment.
What did I write down? I gave it now. Enjoyment. That's th th this. Now I'm with you now, where this is tough. Do I give it a 9.5? I might do what you did with technicals and give it a 9.3.
You're gonna give it a 9.3.
9.3. I thoroughly enjoy this movie every time I sit down and watch,
I'm gonna give it a
which is
9.
a nine. I'll say this just to cap off my point, but the you have to be when you watch it. I don't watch this movie often,
Yeah, exactly.
and there's a reason
That's what I was
why.
gonna say, like, that's why I was close to, like, in between, like, an 8.5 and a 9. It's like, I don't search out this movie to watch it often.
But I'm always happy when I do.
Exactly.
Because it's the same way with my other favorite movie of all time, which is Back to the Future. I don't usually go out and look for it, not because I can't sit and watch it anytime, it's because I don't want to overwatch
Yeah.
it.
And also, it's like, sometimes when I watch a movie, I just want to put something on. Just have background noise. Can't really do that with this movie.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, th this one, it's like if it's your first time watching it, you have to
You
be
gotta
paying
pay
attention.
attention. But also, if you put it on, you're gonna pay attention.
You just get hooked in what's
You
like.
don't.
It's one of those where you just if you pop it on and then you just start listening, you'll start getting enveloped in what's being said.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm gonna stick with the 9.
Okay, so what is the overall? This is probably the highest score we've probably ever given.
Yeah.
I think it was originally Last Night in Soho or The Menu.
One of those two.
Yeah, definitely the first movie that we gave that did not have anything below a 9.
Yeah, so your total score was a 27.8, and mine was a 27.5, which comes out to 27.65.
Yeah, it's high. I can't think of any other movie. Again, I don't ever give out perfect scores, just because I'm always certain there's something. Those non-perfect scores are more because I'm sure there's something, but I can't think of one. I can't think of them.
Yeah, I'm absolutely positive this is our highest score. Like, I think,
And it was a non-horror movie.
yeah, but oh, it's probably The Menu, Last Night in Soho, and Cabin in the Woods that have come closest to this.
To the highest score.
Yeah.
Now, I won't say this takes the throne just because it's not a horror movie, but it is a good double feature. But as horror movies go, I think the reigning thing is still either Last Night in Soho or The Menu.
And I think those were in like 20, high 26s, low
Yeah.
27. Yeah, I think one of them might have touched 27.
But I'd have to go back and
Yeah,
re-listen.
yeah. All right,
Ugh.
that
All
was
right, now.
12 Angry Men.
All right, now on to some bullshit.
All right, now time to turn off the light and to the horror film question mark.
Maybe sci-fi?
Yeah,
Sci-fi thriller, maybe?
can you call it a thriller?
Well, let me see what Wiki calls it. The old Wiki calls it
Not very thrilling.
sci-fi horror. It says it's a sci-fi horror. Now, I'm just gonna say this going forward. Now, did you choose this because of what I told you about it?
Yeah, because you told me you saw it one time. I was like, oh, that'll be fun to go back and watch.
Because
And it
I
came
was
out the same year as 12 Angry. All right, yeah, I'll go
both masterpieces in their own right.
with that.
Because I saw this movie last year with a friend over around here. They do bad nights at our movie planetarium once every f the first Friday of every month. And this was, I think, the first one that I saw. And this is definitely the kind of movie, I don't know if they did it or not, but this is definitely the kind of movie that you'll watch that they would be roasting on Mystery Science Theater. And that is The Giant Claw.
The giant claw.
Now, this one does have a more linear type story
Yeah.
that we can definitely go into.
So here is the linear story written about a 2-minute timeline. Doing science experiment, man in plane. They tell man to fly plane low, he flies it low, they get mad at him. Man sees giant bird, tells them, they say, you're a liar.
You're crazy. Yeah, they said you're pulling our leg. This is some kind of joke.
Yeah. But he insists, so they send out planes. One plane goes missing. They're like, they didn't see anything, and one plane's missing. It's your fault. Then they get a call. A commercial plane saw it, a UFO. Commercial plane went down. They're like, oh, you're nuts,
Maybe
bullshit.
I love the idea that these generals are like, "Oh yeah, you're lying, you're hoaxing." Like, yeah. I'm totally willing to get fired over some
Yeah.
shitty
And then they shoot at bird. Bird's super ugly. Bullets don't affect it. They're like, oh. They tell everyone to stay inside. People don't stay inside.
Don't, people don't.
Yeah. And then they find bird's nest, shoot its eggs in front of the bird.
Bird's pissed.
Kills one man. And then as they're driving away from bird, a group of teens get killed. Because they're like, we're not afraid of the bird, Daddy-O.
I'm glad you
And
wrote down
Daddy-O, like,
Daddy-O too, because I said that too.
they say that 8 times in like a 2-minute span. I guess Daddy-O was cool in the 50s. And then they're like, hey, this bird has antimatter shield, and we figured out a way to disengage it. Disengage it. Bird dies. Movie ends.
And people go home. And so, yeah, so are you starting to do now two-minute sum-ups now?
2 minutes on, yeah.
Two-minute sum-ups.
That's what this movie deserves.
That's, okay, so now the lengthier version. So, yes, as it started out, McAfee is the he is a engineer, and they're doing some experiments with radar out in the North Pole. And he sees this giant bird, or as the movie would have us see, this giant blur.
Yeah.
That is a bird.
Yeah. I love how they say they're in the North Pole.
There's no indication for that.
In the outside scenes, there's grass and trees and stuff. Like, it looks like they're in Kansas.
Just take our word for it. We're in the North Pole.
Yeah.
McAfee goes and is like, yo, I just saw this big giant creature. And
no, you're missing the best part. When he does his first flyby, he's like, okay, we need you to fly low for the experiment. And when he does it, they go, the woman's like, oh my God, why would he do that? Just told him to fly low. What are you talking about?
By the way, the second, that there is a mathematician on this crew who are doing random radar experiments. Yeah. Her name is Sally. And you can tell that Sally and McAfee have some history. They want to have this whole will they won't they kind of relationship, even though I don't buy it.
Yeah.
It's like that relationship where they're like, it looks like they get on each other's nerves, but you just kind of look at them and go, you guys need to just bone and get that over with.
Like, they try to build that tension, it just never really reflects on the screen.
No.
It's like they try to do the will they won't they, and you know how most shows, after they do it, it kind of ruins the show, kills all the tension. That is what it's like.
It doesn't add anything to the plot. Like,
yeah, that's kind of how they were. It's like they already did.
And so, yeah, so he comes back in.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I saw this big giant freaking thing. And I just love the general. He's like, oh, you're pulling our leg. We didn't see anything on the radar. You're just trying to make one of your crazy jokes. And it's like, why would I do that? Like,
the general talks to him like he's stupid. He's like, you were in the air. You're a solid object. Yeah. We had you on radar. There's another solid object. Would radar pick it up or would it not pick it up?
Yeah, talking to him like, dude, I'm a aeronautical engineer, dude. Which they say that, which he doesn't. They call him an aeronautical engineer, even though you look at him, you go, you are not an aeronautical engineer. But for the sake of this movie, he is. Yeah. And you're like, dude, why would I fucking make something like that up?
Yeah.
Like, what could I possibly gain? Like, you obviously have a rapport with me. We've been doing this for a while. Why would I do that?
Yeah. Well, take a joke to that extreme to get other fighter jets in the air.
Because you know me, always pulling the leg of the U.S. military. I know how much the military loves jokes.
Right. Like, okay. Oh, yeah.
And
this movie.
And I love that. And then we get introduced to a narrator, which... Yeah. This movie would have, the narrator tells us stuff that they could have easily, like, just shown us.
Yeah.
Like, then they sent out a fleet of other pilots to go see, but they reported nothing. It's like, yeah, you know, you could have just shown that.
They put McAfee and Sally on a plane back to New York.
Yeah, we're tired of your guff, McAfee. Get out of here.
Yeah, they could have just said, hey, we're going back to New York, because the next scene, they're literally in the plane.
They're literally in a plane. It's like, okay. And they get attacked again. Like, this bird doesn't like McAfee.
Yeah.
Attacks the plane, knocks out the pilot. I don't know how the pilot got knocked. I guess he just hit his head, yeah, like, through turbulence. Think the
bird actually likes McAfee, because that's twice. It was within striking range and didn't kill him, but this bird kills everything.
This bird will kill anything in the sky except McAfee.
Yeah.
And the plane goes down. Oh, and by the way, you don't see this bird yet. You just see this giant blur in the sky. Obviously, when you see how shitty this bird looks later,
Oh, God.
They must have known. They had to have known, because that's why half the time the bird is blurry.
Yeah.
And plane goes down, and I think it's some French-Canadian village or something.
Yeah, Pierre, French-Canadian farmer, comes to the rescue.
Yeah, they survived the plane crash. The plane was nice enough to not explode until they were a good distance away from it.
Yeah, and then this is also my favorite part. The French Canadian farmer's like, I saw a giant bird, la whatever.
La Carnagaca, something.
And McAfee goes, no, you didn't.
Crazy.
No, you didn't. You didn't see anything like that.
It's like, dude, you just got attacked by this fucking thing.
Yeah, and so
Twice.
like he's not saying it like as like a government official, like, no, he didn't see anything. No, he's saying like he literally doesn't believe him.
Oh, you crazy, crazy. Oh, what a
Crazy.
character.
Crazy Pierre.
Crazy,
Playing
old
jokes on
crazy,
us.
old crazy Pierre, always saying that he sees giant birds in the air.
Like, what is this?
And so military, they managed to fund the military. Military comes in, they take away. So now we've had two planes taken out, because not only did McAfee come back and the officers and the general was like, oh, we don't believe you, but then they sent out a search party and one of the planes went missing.
Yeah.
So now we have two downed planes and one casualty, because I think I don't know if the pilot, yeah, at least one
One,
casualty.
no, there's it's like 60 something at this point because the commercial flight had 60 plus people on it.
Okay. Oh, I was just thinking of the people that went out to look. So
Yeah.
now we have three down planes and a good amount of people dead, or at least presumed missing.
Yeah.
And still people are just, oh, crazy. Like, if there was something in the air, surely the radar would have picked it up.
Obviously not, because it's
Obviously
out
not.
there and it's not picking it up.
And I'll just say this though, as much as for the plane crash, I love cheap effects like these because
Yeah.
the plane is obviously a prop, and then when it explodes, they cut away and just throw like debris at the actors.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I love a nice low budget. That's my kind of budget.
Yeah.
And oh yeah, and the farmer's been attacked. So as we were talking about the romance, because now they're on a different flight going back to New York.
Yeah.
Me and my friend who watched this, we just kept cringing and laughing at this forced romance,
Yeah.
because they're sitting there on a crowded plane, and she's sitting there, Sally's sitting there closing her eyes trying to sleep. Kathy just looks over at her and just leans over and just plants one on her, just kisses her, long kiss, which I don't know if in the 50s that was considered romantic, but nowadays seems a little Harvey Weinstein-y.
Yeah. Ooh. Not a fan of that one.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan. Nobody in the theater when we watched it was a fan of it.
Yeah, like, oh, that is not
It
okay, sir.
that is not okay. And then they have a little argument because he's thinking, oh, I think that the give me the maps. I think I have an idea of what's going on, because it was attack. There was an attack here, an attack here, an attack here. Look, don't you see a pattern? And she's like, no. But what if I make this circle, this giant? I was like, dude, you sound like you just pulled that out of your ass.
Right.
I just made this giant circle thing. Look,
Flying around in a circle across the world.
I was like, yeah, if I probably could have made circles like that too, and made them wide enough if I wanted to. He's look, completely equal. I was like, dude, you did this freehand with no like measurements or anything like that. I could make like these kind of circles if I didn't have any kind
Yeah.
of measuring instrument.
Oh.
She doesn't believe him. Which nobody would if you saw it. And then he said, ah, shut up and kiss me. And then I was like, my friend, I looked at her. She was just visually just upset. Meanwhile, I'm laughing because I was like, oh, the 50s.
Oh, 50.
So this thing keeps attacking planes. And even if the radar didn't pick it up, surely something would. Like, this thing they said is about as big as a battleship.
Yeah.
So just imagine a battleship, which, I live in close to Norfolk, and we have the
I was in the Marine Corps. I've been on battleships. They're huge.
SS Wisconsin is over here at one of the museums that you can go on. Battleship ain't a small thing.
No. Like, you could see planes in the sky with the naked eye during the day, right?
You would see a battleship.
Yeah. You'd have to fly almost out of the atmosphere for us not to notice it with the naked eye.
Even on a cloudy day, you would see a battleship in the air.
Yeah.
But finally, the military believes them. They finally get some pictures of this thing. And Dave, go ahead and you tell me, what was your reaction when you first saw this thing? And clearly, when it wasn't blurry.
I went, oh,
This is what Chris meant.
They dropped this thing a couple times before shooting, and they just didn't have the money to replace it.
This thing got dropped. This thing, somebody probably set the top of it on fire at one point and then had to smash it out.
Yeah, because, okay, it's bald. It has a bald head like a vulture.
Yes.
Human eyes.
Human eyes.
A weird looking beak.
Weird looking beak, and it's all on puppet string.
Yeah, it's a mess.
It looks like it has human teeth.
Yeah.
Wait, did it have teeth? I'm pretty damn sure it had teeth.
Pretty sure, yeah.
All right, I'm looking at it right now. All right, it looks like it had like glued in teeth. Just fangs. No regular teeth,
Yeah.
just uneven fangs. And I mean, that was the big reason why I told you about it when I said, "Dude, just watch this movie." With the second you see it, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And everybody was laughing their ass off when I saw it in the bad movie thing at the planetarium.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, "Oh my God, look at
Oh,
this
God.
thing."
Yeah. Okay.
Like, surely you could have.
Surely, like, somebody in the studio had to be like, hey, guys, this isn't good enough. Like, look for something better. But guess not.
I was trying to see if they had a okay, it says this film cost between $250,000 and $500,000.
Is that in just for inflation, like today's dollars, or?
Says in May 1957, Sam Katzman stated in an interview with Variety that this film at the time cost 250 to 500 at the time.
What did they spend the money on?
It couldn't have been the effects. It
Yeah.
was a puppet.
Because that amount of money for 1957 is a pretty good amount.
And whenever
Were
you
they
see,
paying these actors hand over foot to be in this terrible movie?
whenever you see the creature actually pick up things like a plane or at one point a train, it's not like it's like a puppet picking up a model train set,
Yeah.
like a model train set that you would get at a toy store.
Yeah, it's not good. I do believe that all the money had to go to the actors and actresses, 'cause none of them seemed like they wanted to be there.
And you don't ever see like things actually exploding. You'll see like B-roll footage from like recycled footage from something else of like a plane going down, but you
Yeah.
could tell, oh, this was taken from something, not this movie. It was taken from like either a different movie or some old B-roll footage of something.
Much like me and my best friend did when we were 10, we made this movie called the Gas Station Mini Movie with Legos. And we had a guy drive away from a gas station, drive back, and crash into it. And for the explosion, we used the White House explosion from Independence
Think of
Day.
that, but the black and white version.
Yeah.
So they try to shoot. The military finally believes them, and they're like, "Okay, we're gonna send out a couple of." I love that the fact that now that they actually believe them, now they can find this thing no problem.
Yeah, and they're
They're
like,
like,
we're gonna shoot it down.
"I'll shoot
But
it down."
there's a problem. One I didn't see coming.
Yeah, when we found that out, we were like, "Really?"
It has an antimatter shield, which I didn't even think that scientists discovered antimatter yet in
Yeah, I
the
was like, antimatter shield? Like, wait, how do you even know that?
I thought that was like a 2000s thing when they discovered that, but okay.
This movie, by the way, when they try to explain it,
Yeah.
just scientific jargon nonsense. It's
Yeah.
just, in fact, that actually is to the movie's detriment because I wrote down here, can't it just be a giant killer bird?
Yeah.
Like,
Okay. Goddamn. All right. Antimatter was discovered in 1932. Would have never guessed that in a million years.
neither would have I. And they start at this point, then they start bogging you down with way too much scientific jargon, which is like, you're putting way too much. Have you seen this bird? Like,
Yeah.
you're taking this movie way too seriously
Right.
to be talking about antimatter, reversing the polarities of
But what
such.
I don't get is then they're like, oh, they figure out that the bird's nesting and they go find its nest and shoot its eggs while the bird is basically right on the egg. Why didn't the antimatter shield protect the egg?
Protect the egg because it's from the same thing.
Yeah,
It's from this
and the
same
bird is
place.
right there. You would think the antimatter shield's there.
Oh, and by the way, we're like, if you're wondering where this bird came from, don't really
Outer
know.
space.
Just outer space,
Yeah.
like outer space, wherever there's like an antimatter force field that
Protects birds, yeah.
protects giant birds, and it came to Earth specifically to lay its egg.
Yeah. And then they're like, we're gonna shoot something at the Antimatter Shield and bring it down.
Mazik Adams, I think they said.
Yeah.
Which at this point, McAfee is like the head of all of this stuff, which you're like, dude, I thought you were just an engineer. How are you now? You just discovered antimatter. How are you like now leading the research in all this? Because he's an engineer. She's a mathematician.
Yeah.
You guys have a scientist with you, but it's like McAfee is now like heading, like, how did he become the lead guy on this? Like point guard on this?
I have no idea.
It was like, dude, you work with radars, man. And we obviously found out that radars don't work on this thing.
Yeah.
So, goodbye. Like, I think your time is over now. Like, let's bring in actual scientists and military now.
No, but I guess he's also a scientist because he's one who figures out how to get it to work.
They just give him that ability.
Yeah.
And Sally kind of becomes a little bit of a side character, even though she's a mathematician. Somebody who would probably be a little bit more...
Of use.
In real life.
But no, she's kicked to the side. She's there to...
bring them sandwiches at one point.
Yeah.
Sandwiches and coffee.
Yeah.
I laughed my ass off.
And then she runs the numbers. What are the numbers? We don't know. We never hear them given to her. She just knows.
My friend, who was getting just visibly more upset as we were watching this, I just kept like, just kept knocking into her, just saying, "Oh, the 50s. Oh, yeah, get that coffee and sandwiches. The men are talking." she, you know, obviously joking.
Yeah,
because I could see it was because we would talk afterwards. I was like, "God," because me and her were both like, "How she is way more qualified to do this stuff. Why is she being reduced to getting them coffee and sandwiches?"
And then we get towards the end of the movie where they figure out how to do it, and then they're gonna put everything on the plane. They're like, "How long is this gonna take?" "Oh, about 4 hours."
"Yeah, sure,
30 minutes." "Okay.
Yeah, I'll put a rush on that."
Yeah.
That's always funny in movies when they do that. You're like, "Oh, how long is it going to take? Oh, man, to put this antimatter Mazik atomizer onto this B-52 or whatever it was. Yeah, it's going to take like 4 hours for us to just get this thing mounted."
Yeah.
And it's like, "Well, you got 30 minutes. I just told you it's going to take 4 hours. Like, I don't know what you want me to do."
But they get it done. Okay. And they shoot it, brings down the shield, and then the bird dies. It gets shot up. That is the movie.
And then you just see you see McAfee and Sally look at each other, about to do like that last kiss thing, and then it pans over, and you see in the water just the claw sticking up out of the water, and then that's how it ends.
Yep, and that was the giant claw. Yeah,
that was the giant claw. Two vastly different movies.
Yeah,
remember how I said when you have to like. You have to, if you're in one setting, your dialogue has to be perfect.
Yeah.
This one opted for neither.
Yeah.
Like no good dialogue, nor good effects.
Yeah. This is a movie. You're going to see when we do our ratings, because...
Yeah, this is a movie.
It is a movie, but technicals.
I gave it a 3.2, because it is a B-movie, and it has B-movie technicals.
But I heard the budget, I'm like, that's a pretty solid budget for...
And I'll say that if you compare it to King Kong, that came out 20 years earlier, King Kong somehow had better technicals.
Yeah, technicals are not good in this movie.
Like, with the effects on King Kong, the monster, are better than yours, and you're 20 years later with probably a bigger budget. You know you fucked up.
Yeah, it's like no one gave a fuck about this movie. Like, it was just like a Hollywood producer said, "I want a movie about a giant bird. You guys make it." And they're all like, "Fucking dumb.
Yeah,
like, put together this piece of shit."
Well, I mean, the 50s is actually had a bunch of like creature movies and stuff like that. So I'm not knocking it for just being a giant bird, but for it being a giant bird, killer bird, you were taking this movie way too seriously for the dialogue and get bogged down with Masonic atoms and antimatter.
The score seemed out of place at times. Like, for me, the score in this movie was always like 4 or 5 seconds too early.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and how annoying did the sound of the bird get after a while?
Never again. Never.
Oh, there's instances where dudes jump out of like airplanes with parachutes. Literally looks like those green army men that you used to have when you were like
a kid
sure growing.
What they were.
A kid in the 90s where you would just have the little army men with just like the little tiny
Yeah.
Plastic parachute. It looked just like that.
All right, now let's get to the story of this.
I gave it a 3.4 just because it was that era of ridiculous. I mean, there's a lot of ridiculous creature feature movies from the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I would 3.5 because, like you said, there. Sorry if I interrupted you.
No, you're good. You're good.
There are a lot of ridiculous creature movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is like close to like the bottom of the barrel of them.
Oh no, I'm it's, sure it's...
There's probably more that I just haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
But this feels like at the very low end of it. Yeah,
I've seen you know, a good amount of them. Yeah, it's not. It's certainly not good. But as a story, I can't really.
Yeah.
It's certainly not like as bad as a two.
Yeah.
Because I mean, as a story, I mean, you could follow it. It's some of it's dumb as hell.
Yeah. It's cohesive enough.
It's cohesive enough that I can say a 3.4. And right. I honestly, weirdly, like the science fiction part is the part that took me out of it.
Yeah. All right, so now time for enjoyment.
I'm factoring in being able to watch. If this is one of those that you enjoy it more if you just watch it once. Like, this isn't a repeat viewing movie.
It's so bad, it kind of becomes enjoyable.
Yes.
Laughing at this movie, and that's why I gave it a 5.
I gave it a 4.7.
Yeah.
And just for because I can't lie, when I saw it at the planetarium, people were enjoying themselves. People were laughing at how ridiculous it was. I was laughing at the characters who were just like non-believable. Like even the generals are just like somehow the general like put McAfee in charge of this stuff. Yet when McAfee like summoned him because he's like, I have an idea how to do this thing. The general was like, all right, you know, you're wasting my time. You better not be pulling our leg on this one. He's like, dude. Like, the dude's been right about this so far. Like, what? You have no reason not to believe him.
Yeah.
You're the one put him in charge of this. So, like, this better be good. This better be good. You better not be wasting our time with this. And then he starts explaining it to him. And he's like, I thought I told you, you know, I'm not in the mood for any kind of shenanigans. Like, dude.
But I think I'm going to start taking a saying from this when he's like, oh, I'm not sure. And then all of a sudden, once it starts making sense to the journalist, like, well, I invest my dime. What?
He said, dude, what kind of cartoon did you just come out of?
Right.
Like, so yeah, 4.7 is what I gave it.
All right. So your total score was 11.3, and I gave it 11.5, which gives it a 11.4.
Yeah, appropriate.
A 16.25 difference between movie number one and movie number two.
Which I think this is like, that's like equates to like a 30 point something out of 100. I mean, it's watch it once,
yeah. That,
which is about all you can really do.
Yeah,
because I watched it the first time. I watched it the second time. I watched it. It was definitely more of a slog.
Yeah,
the first time I watched it at the theater, it was fun. You get fun. You have to watch it with a group, and you just first laugh. Time
I watched it was when we were supposed to record, but I was sick, so I was kind of like drinking,
head cold,
and I had fun with it. Second time I was watching, I was like, ah, oh, this is a rough watch.
Yeah. Plus, you had a head cold too, so you
were just
so
like, "Oh, yeah."
Probably high on NyQuil, and you're just sleep deprived. So, if you're in that state, you'll be like, "This is ridiculous."
But I watched it this morning. I was like, oh, "It's rough to watch."
Yeah. So watch it once and then never again.
Yeah.
That should be our quote for every time we. When's the best time to watch it? Watch it once with friends and then never again.
So. It's still not close to some of the worst movies we've seen.
No.
But it's nowhere near good.
No, it's again,
it's not average, but...
My barometer for bad movies is Hanukkah still.
Hanukkah and then 2018 Black Christmas.
Soul Survivor,
or like our bottom three.
Yes.
I'm close to them, but it's still pretty bad.
All for different reasons.
Yeah.
Hanukkah to me was annoying.
It's a terrible movie, but the only reason it's not the worst is it had one funny scene.
Okay,
the dude. How bad these movies are is it having one funny scene made it slightly better than me.
Soul Survivor was boring.
Good God, that's so boring.
And I didn't like the fact that they basically like
the characters were unlikable. Yeah,
the character is unlikable, and of course, not enough Luke Wilson.
Yeah, not enough Luke.
And 2019 Black Christmas was just way too up on its high horse.
So annoying. It was boring and annoying, yeah. But this was bad, but watchable.
Yes, bad, but well, I'm trying to think of a movie that I can compare it to that I was like, I didn't really like it, but I can't say it's just kind of there.
Yeah, I would say probably like My Bloody Valentine remake.
No, I'd say I'd like that more. Maybe
Yeah,
I was gonna
another
say maybe
horror.
Lighthouse, but it's Lighthouse, like no, Lighthouse. I tried to like it, but I couldn't even like it, ironically.
Yeah, Lighthouse. Technically, it's just a great film, but everything else about it sucked. But
It just exists in a realm of its own of those 50s B movies.
yeah. But that is our first double feature, and now Chris is about to let us know what we are. Will be our next double feat.
All right. We are sticking in the 50s.
Okay.
I'm flipping between these two, but I'll ask if you've seen this one first. Have you ever seen Strangers on a Train?
No.
Okay, that'll be my pick.
Is that the horror movie or non-horror?
That is a Alfred Hitchcock. I believe it is classified as a thriller. Let me see. Crime thriller.
Okay.
And then to lighten it up a little bit, we're gonna go. It's kind of a mixture, lightening it up, but also within the realm of horror is Abbott and Costello Meet the Invisible Man.
Meet the Invisible Man.
Yeah, Abbott and Costello. Put a little comedy in there. I was looking at that. The other one it was going to be was The Thing from Another World.
I watched that when I was sick and we were supposed to record. I watched, 12 Angry Men and the Giant Claw. I just kept watching old movies. That was the next movie I watched.
How was it?
Surprisingly good.
Okay, well then I'm going to put that on my list of things to watch. But so we're going to do Strangers on a Train, old Alfred Hitchcock, and Abbott and Costello Meet the Invisible Man. But we also have to pick what our first versus episode of the year is going to be.
First one is going to be international.
International, all right. But not Thailand or Japan, you said.
Yeah, because we use those.
Okay.
I'm just going to stick to my strategy picking up movies.
Okay, I got mine. I have never seen it.
And I have mine.
Okay.
All right.
Mine is Where Evil Lurks.
Okay.
Where Evil Lurks, I believe that came out 2 years ago. I think it's from Argentina.
Oh, because I've already seen that movie.
Are we trying not to do one that we've both seen?
No, you could do it.
Right, because I've never seen it.
No.
So
Yeah.
if you need a second, you can think.
No, I already selected my movie. I'm just going to stick with it. I'm going to go with Shake, Rattle, and Roll Extreme. It's
What was
a
it called?
Shake, Rattle, and Roll Extreme.
You'll
It's
have to
a movie.
text it to me. Hey, you never know, man. I might not like Where Evil Lurks. I've heard like sometimes it's an uncomfortable movie.
It
So
is very uncomfortable, I will say. It's going to be rough for me to watch a second time, but.
all right, so I might watch it like because enjoyment is where like enjoyment counts for a lot of things. A lot of times I might find like certain uncomfortable moments gratuitous.
Yeah.
So oh yeah, so I was ooh, like have you ever seen the movie Dogtooth?
Maybe.
Look up the synopsis of that one now. Ooh, that makes me kind of want to change my fifth one to movies that make you uncomfortable.
I'm good on that.
Movies like Dogtooth or I don't know,
Centipede.
Human Centipede or I Want You to Suffer. But that was a good way to kind of kick off, dust ourselves off. It's been, we took a little hiatus for the holidays.
Yeah, had a lot of fun tonight, and we appreciate you guys listening.
Love you.
Have a good week, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Body Bag Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe and leave us a comment as to what you'd like to hear us review or any horror movie topics you'd like to hear us rant and rave about.
And while you're at it, you can find us on Twitter at Body Bag Pod and on Instagram at Body Bag Podcast.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.